Hey y'all, and welcome back to Give Me the Creeps with Abby and Daniela.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Today's my turn.
Sure is.
I just gave myself like Barney and Friends vibes.
Oh, did you? I grew up with that. I have so many tapes.
Same. Same. So I want to begin a series. It doesn't have to be like every week, you know, like I don't have to do it for like weeks, in a row. Like it doesn't have to be my turn in a row, you know?
Oh, I get it. It's just like one of the first times you're going to cover this.
Yes. Cause it's not that like important, I guess. But I want to do the series on elementals.
Ooh.
So I'm sure there are some of you that are asking, what the fuck are elementals? And they are ancient, not necessarily deities, but like spirits or demons. And ancient cultures believed that everything in nature had a spirit or a demon that inhabited it.
Oh, yep.
So once the theory of the four elements was embraced, like earth, water, fire, and air,
mm-hmm.
Once those were embraced, they had, each one had a spirit that embodied it, and these spirits were called elementals. So in most, if not all, traditions, each element is associated with very specific correspondences and used in specific ways based on their nature. Water is traditionally associated with healing, emotions, and intuition, and it's sometimes referred to as the element of movement, as water is constantly in motion and often used, like if you were doing like spells or something, if you're trying to do something with water, as far as like spiritually, it's used for like cleansing, purifying, clarifying, and healing the body and mind. Mm. But water is also destructive and deadly. So water can take life just as easily as it can give life.
Mm.
So then we have earth, which is also known as the solid element. It's the element of stability, grounding, endurance, abundance, and even stubbornness. Earth is often unwielding, but other times light as a feather and easily moved. And it's from earth that plants grow and thrive, with few exceptions, providing an abundant life source of food. Hmm. And then we have fire, and that, on the other hand, represents passion, enthusiasm, love, and transformation, and is vastly unpredictable and volatile. And finally, there's air, the most elusive of the elements, as we cannot easily see it. Air is the element of communication, knowledge, and wisdom, but can also be flighty and a bit ditzy at times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the hell Pepper just growled at, but... So today, I'm going to cover fire. What the fuck, she's barking. Okay. So I'm going to start with fire folklore, just because I like to start with a little background. I feel like I'm moving real fast. Okay, so fire has long been coveted by humankind as not only a life bringer, but as a source of transformation as well. How he first acquired fire is debatable, and we will likely never know the true story. But the fact that we did allow humans to prosper, and ultimately dominate our surroundings. So there are myths found in every single culture around the world explaining how humans first acquired fire. From the Greeks to the Cherokee to the Hindus to the Aztecs. Almost all these stories tell a story of theft. The fire is stolen from some greedy source and given as a gift to humans. In Greek mythology, the Titan Prometheus stole fire from the gods, giving it to man, along with the skill of metalwork because he loved humans more than the Olympians, who banished his family to Tartarus, which was the underworld. This gift resulted in the progress of civilization and ultimately resulted in fire temples across Greece. And in various Native American tribes in the Pacific Northwest, in the Pacific Northwest and First Nations, fire was stolen by coyote, beaver, or dog and given to humans, while in Algonquian myth, it is a rabbit who steals fire from a man and his two daughters to share with other humans. In the Cherokee myth, however, after both possum and buzzard failed to acquire fire, Grandmother Spider weaves a web to sneak into the land of the light, where she steals fire from the sun and hides it in a clay pot. She brings the clay pot back, giving it to humans so they may see in the dark.
Mm.
In Rig Veda, which is a Hindu text, it is Matarisvan, who steals... gonna butcher all of this because I didn't even bother to look up pronunciations because most of the time I fuck them up anyways. So yes, it's Matarisvan. So, like, we different than the last time. Who steals fire that had been hidden away from humans. All of these myths reveal the nature of fire, that it's deeply associated with trickery and chaos, most likely because we may think we have control over fire, but ultimately it's the thing in control. Furthermore, fire is extremely destructive but transformative, thus leading to the progress of civilization in all of these stories.
Hmm.
So fire was so revered by our ancestors that shrines, temples, and festivals were dedicated to fire. In ancient Greece, every private and public hearth was regarded as a sanctuary for the hearth goddess Hestia. In Greek mythology, Hestia was assigned the duty by Zeus to feed and maintain the fires in the Olympian hearth with the fat from animal sacrifices to the gods. As such, she was usually given the first offering during a sacrifice, so that she may share a portion with the gods to maintain their fire. While most of her shrines were the hearths in private and public places, there were at least two temples in Ermione and Sparta that were dedicated to her alone. Each city had a public fire dedicated to Hestia that was not allowed to burn down. Failure to maintain her fire was a breach of duty and was viewed as bad luck. However, her fires were ritually extinguished and relit, and when a new colony was established, flame from Hestia's public hearth was carried to light the fires in the new settlement. Hestia's Roman equivalent, Vesta, played a much more prominent role in Roman culture. She was very rarely depicted in human form, but instead as a flame. Vesta's temple in the Forum Romanus only allowed entry to Vesta's priestesses known as Vestals. The Vestals tended the sacred hearth fires of Vesta, which were believed to be indispensable for the preservation and continuity of the Roman state. the sacred fire was so important that water was not allowed into the inner Aedis, nor allowed to stay in nearby areas for longer than needed. If water was needed, it was carried in vessels with a tiny foot that made them more stable. Should the fires be extinguished, it was believed something terrible would befall the Roman Empire. Plus, I guess. Vesta was so revered that her festival, Vestalia, from June 7th to the 15th, was regarded as one of the most important of the Roman holidays. On the first day of Vestalia, the Pinus Vestae was opened for one day only so that women could offer sacrifices to Vesta. Mothers would come, disheveled and barefoot, to ask for blessings for their families. A donkey, the animal sacred to Vesta, was crowned with flowers and bread and honored. A donkey. That's interesting. Vesta, I don't know why I thought of Hercules.
When you said elementals at the very beginning, for some reason I pictured the Titans.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's pretty much that.
So we're on the kind of the same wavelength.
We sure are. And then I just thought of the donkey in there with her broken ass leg. Yeah.
Oh, the mule. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Penelope.
Yes, that is her name, Penelope, with her little fucking hat.
Yes, her little bandana or whatever. So cute. What a good movie.
It is. I'm going to go watch it. I actually talk about how I got into this later, and it had to, of course, be Disney.
Oh, yeah.
So Vesta's importance was so deeply entrenched in Roman thought that it was one of the very last of the pagan cults to remain after the rise of Christianity until it was disbanded by Theodosius I in AD 391. So across the ocean, two important Celtic deities were honored for their sacred flames. The first was Brigid, who later was Christianized, Saint Brigid. Brigid, who is deeply associated with holy wells, was also associated with sacred flames. In Kildare, Brigid's sacred fire was tended by priestesses since pre-Christian times. Many attempts were made to extinguish the flames after Christianity dominated the Isles, but were unsuccessful until the 16th century when monasteries were suppressed. The sacred flames were relit in 1993 by Mary Teresa Cullen, Edward Cullen's cousin.
I mean, right?
The former leader of the Brigidine Sisters, a group of nuns dedicated to Saint Brigid. Since 1993, the sacred fires have burned bright, being maintained by 19 nuns at St. Brigid's Sanctuary. It was rumored that the sacred flame was originally surrounded by a hedge that no man could cross. Any man who attempted to cross was said to go mad, die, or become crippled, leaving only women to tend to Brigid's fire. Brigid is most often celebrated at Imbolc. I cannot remember how to pronounce that, but I'm pretty sure that's not right. Which is a fire festival also known as St. Brigid's Day on February 1st, where she is said to breathe life-giving warmth back into the earth. Candles are ritually lit as a form of sympathetic magic to coax the sun's return and honor Brigid. However, it wasn't just Brigid who was associated with fire in Celtic lore. Belus, or Baal, whose name means shining one, was one of the most widely worshipped of the Celtic deities. He was the Celtic god of the sun and was celebrated year-round, but honored specifically at Beltane, Ancient Fire Festival on May 1st, which is very interesting. I just was rereading one of my favorite books, Court of Thorn and Roses, and they talk about the Fire Festival, but they called it something else. So there are at least 51 known inscriptions describing Belinus across Celtic Britain and Iberia, and even mentions in Roman texts. Like Brigid, Belinus had sacred fires dedicated to him, and from these fires, bonfires, also known as bale fires, were lit upon the hilltops the night of Beltane. Cattle and other farm animals were herded between these fires to remove all impurities and keep the animals free from illness until the following Beltane. Some sources state that people would leap over these great fires as well to purify themselves and to protect them in the upcoming year. Hearth fires were also extinguished, ashes cleaned out, and replaced with fire from the sacred flames of Belinus to bring in purity and new beginnings to the home. I like that.
I like that too. Little rituals.
Yes. The only ritual I do is I do a little pinch of cinnamon and I blow it into the house on the first each month to bring in prosperity.
That's nice.
So all of these deities and their resulting festivals and shrines encompass the importance of fire in human history as a bringer of life, a purifier, a protector, and an agent of change. Other sun gods from around the world include Ra, Aten. I'm going to attempt this Aztec one. Nanahuatzin. Helios and Sol were worshipped year-round with the sun's heavenly movement. Early humans recognized that as the sun traveled through the sky, that it drove the changing of the seasons. From this knowledge, myths arose to explain what happened to the sun god during each transformation. In modern Wicca, the equivalent of this story traces the birth and death of the god who represents the sun. These myths were so prevalent around the world that early Christianity adopted them and associated them with Jesus. Sympathetic magic, charms, and spells were often used to coax the return of the sun, keep up the heat, or honor the sun's death. As mentioned before, candles are lit at Imbolc as a form of sympathetic magic, while the Yule log is lit at Yule for the same reason, as well as to bring health and good luck to those within. At Midsummer, also known as Litha, sun charms were created to keep up the heat so that the crops would continue to grow and thus produce a bountiful harvest. Our ancestors recognized that after the charms were designed to keep the sun strong enough for the remaining growing season, else they would not have enough stores to make it through the winter months. Prior to this introduction of mistletoe, the Irish used apples as part of an All Saints Day sun charm to protect against glamour and witchery during the dark half of the year. Basically, these charms were believed to shed light on trickery. Apart from fire's association with deities, it has long been viewed as a protective force. This likely arose from the fact that our early ancestors found that keeping fires lit through the night safeguarded against beasts of the night. Fire quickly became associated with warding off evil spirits, especially in the case of childbirth. Multiple cultures around the world lit candles and, or well, they still do, light candles and lamps to keep them burning to ward against demons waiting to pounce on the newborn child and mother. This custom still persists in parts of Britain, Scandinavia, and Germany, where candles and fires are lit around the new baby to keep evil spirits away. Some of these tales refer to changelings stealing away newborn babies, which we did an episode of. I almost did it again by accident. Some of these tales refer to changelings stealing away newborn babes, while others suggest demons are waiting to claim the baby for the devil. Other folklore customs include waving candles over newlyweds to protect against unwanted guests, while in France, jumping over a candle flame is said to ward against sickness and bring good luck. The nursery rhyme, Jack Be Nimble, is an ode to this custom. As mentioned.
Really?
Yes.
Me and Jay always say that for no reason. I never knew what it even was.
Well, like, there we are.
Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack jump over the candlestick.
Yes, ma'am. There it is.
That's really funny. Anyways, go on.
As mentioned earlier, this was also the reason cattle were driven between bonfires on Beltane. Because fire is considered a purifier, being able to cleanse one of disease. Among the Nandi, cattle are driven through fire and coated with milk to cure disease outbreaks within the herd. The Chukchi drive away evil spirits from their reindeer using a similar custom to that of the Celts, driving the reindeer close to a sacred fire so that the breath of fire could drive away contamination. Despite this association with driving away evil spirits, fire has also been used to lead spirits on their journey. In Hinduism, a lamp is placed before the dying person to help guide their spirit to Yama. On Samhain, jack-o'-lanterns were traditionally carved and placed in windows and along walkways to not only ward off evil spirits that cross the veil, but also to guide their ancestors home.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Fire has also been used as a form of divination and as an omen. As mentioned earlier, the extinguishing of Hestia's and Vesta's fires were believed to bring ruin and bad luck. The Banyaro in Central Africa and the people of British New Guinea will not hunt the following morning if their fire goes out overnight, which is an omen of bad luck and death. In modern Greece, the behavior of logs in a fire is said to foretell the future. Crackling means that good news or a friend is coming, while sparks and ash flying are believed to foretell trouble and anxiety brewing.
Hmm.
On the other hand, in parts of Britain, cinders were read to predict major future events such as births, marriages, and deaths. And if you look at candles, the way the candle flame flickers, that also means shit too. The vast amount of folklore around fire suggests a few things. First, fire is an important source of life. It warms, cooks food, and inspires. Second, fire is an important protector and purifier, yet can consume all that it touches. In modern times, witches used fire for these same reasons, often in protection rituals and to send messages to the spirit world. So, now that we've gotten into a little bit of that folklore, we're going to get into mythical fire creatures. And I was just gonna do the actual elemental spirits for each element, like gnomes for earth and shit like that, but it was gonna be a really fucking short episode if I just did that, so I'm gonna just do the mythical fire creatures. And for the future, the rest of the series, I'm doing the same for each element.
Nice.
Yes. So, of course, there is like a good handful, but I'm going to start with each like culture's folklore, what creature is associated with each. So, in Celtic folklore. I said Celtic earlier. I cannot help it. The basketball team.
I know.
In Celtic folklore, the terrifyingly dangerous Carthanish. That's as good as that's going to get. was part demon, part serpent, and part witch, giving her a hideous Medusa-like appearance as she slithered around, causing chaos, death, and destruction. She could also be found living in lakes. She can breathe fire and would often maliciously burn down villages and family homes, as well as burn up or poison wells. It was said that she was invincible apart from a single mole on her left side. I don't know where on her left side. that made her vulnerable. And even in death, she could be brought back to life if one of her bones is snapped.
Like, wow.
Yeah, that's scary.
Powerful.
Mm-hmm. In German folklore, there are kobolds, which are mischievous little fire fae that are easily offended / temperamental, but are generally friendly beings who offer household assistance or assistance to those working in caves or mines. These little guys are generally invisible, but those who have caught a glimpse say that they are around the size of a small toddler, slightly hunched, and sometimes dressed in a red coat and a hat with a brim. That sounds terrifying to me.
Yeah, just so specific like that.
Yes, it just makes me think of the little boy that's singing to that fucking terrifying song in Insidious.
Oh my gosh, like, yep.
No.
He's not singing it, is he?
No, he's not singing it. He's just dancing to it. Ugh. And they can also shape-shift into animals such as cats, hens, snakes, inanimate objects.
That would freak me out.
Yes. Yeah. Inanimate objects.
Could you imagine you look and there's somebody standing there and you look again and then there's like a pot on the ground or something?
No. Don't.
Something random.
Do this to me.
Is that one of my plants? I don't remember buying that plant.
So not just even that. They can shapeshift into fire. Mm-hmm. And when they move, I think regardless of any shape that they take, when they move, they look like it looks like just a strip of fire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's scary. Germans, you're scary.
That is weird.
In Norse mythology, the evil being of chaos called Surtur is a humanoid primordial Hutin fire giant with a bright flaming sword. Born from the flames of Muspelheim, the fire realm, the Surtur is unimaginably strong, immortal, and possesses the ability to manipulate and embody volcanic fire from the underworld. His flames were said to have engulfed the nine worlds, including Earth, in a catastrophic omnicidal event called Ragnarok, which then allowed for rebirth and new beginnings. Ragnarok was like the only word that I had. What's the word?
Memorized?
No, not memorized. That I was sure I was saying correctly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. In ancient Egyptian mythology, the phoenix is an eagle-sized bird with magnificently long peacock-like feathers colored gold and scarlet. When coming to the end of its life, the phoenix will engulf itself in flames and will bore a new phoenix. Hence why this mythical bird is the symbol of death and rebirth, new beginnings, and balance. In Greek mythology, the lampads are fire and underworld nymphs. I knew you were going to like that one. Nymphs are beautiful young women who are lesser deities. They attend to the whims of gods and goddesses, and they go by the name Abigail Pibana. They are very closely associated with the nature of their environment, and as they live within the underworld, The lampads are closely associated with death. The bright torches that they hold to light the paths for the dead are said to have the power to drive one mad. Lampads also have the ability to use illusions and black magic to deceive. Originally, they were a gift from Zeus to Hecate, or Hecate, I don't know how. There's like 5 million pronunciations for her, but a gift from Zeus to Hecate as gratitude for her help in the Titanomancy, which was the war between the Titans and the Olympians. There we go. And so are frequently regarded as Hecate's companions throughout her nighttime travels. So she's just got these lampads following her around.
Cool.
And they also attend to Persephone.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Also in Greek mythology, there are the chimeras, and they are beastly hybrid monster with the head and body of a male lion, an additional head of a goat on its back, and a tail ending with a venomous snake head. It's one of the many monsters born by Typhon and Echidna. The Lycan, the Lycian chimera is able to breathe fire from its lion head, and its snake tail head is extremely venomous. It possesses great strength and size and is incredibly deadly in battle. There are actually a few different variations of what it looks like and what its abilities are, including my favorite that the author Sarah J. Maas came up with. Shout out to my Maas holes. Its name is Syrinx in her book Crescent City, but he's basically like a little lion pug. Like he's got a face of a pug, even though it's like a lion's head, but he's supposed to be little too. And so naturally, because he acts like a dog, I'm obsessed with Syrinx.
Cute. Mm-hmm.
In Mapuche, I'm so sorry if I said it wrong, but the Mapuche are from Chile. In this mythology, the sheriffe, is an entity made of living magma and volcanic stones. I thought of Tefite. No. What's her name in Moana?
Moana? Oh, yeah. I don't know the name either.
No, that sounds wrong, too. Okay, it's made of living magma and volcanic stones and can grow as tall as 12 feet. Its ability consists of extreme heat, strength, and can cause volcanic eruptions. They are dangerous, sadistic, and also have an appetite for virgin sacrifices.
Whoa.
Science. In Aztec mythology, there is the friendly Xiuquatl. It's a turquoise fire serpent with a black upturned snout, large curved fangs, short front limbs with dagger-like claws and a tail. This creature was said to carry the sun across the sky each day and is therefore associated with calendars, time, light, and fire. It can also breathe fire and is fire resistant. In Arabic mythology, we meet again the jinn. And for those who did not join us or don't remember our Middle Eastern hauntings episode, the jinn is a shapeshifter that appears as a human or animal, sometimes even giant-sized. They do not reveal their true form to humans as it is too terrifying. Therefore, they are said to be spirits made out of smokeless fire. They can conjure, manifest, transform anything at their will, and have the ability to shapeshift into any form they choose. They also possess immense strength and are extremely resilient to human weapons apart from magic. And also in Arabic mythology, there is Ifrit, which often represents itself as a giant humanoid creature with wings, but as Ifrits are a type of djinn, they too are shape-shifting beings made out of smokeless fire and do not reveal their true forms to humans. They are more wicked and unpredictable than normal djinn, but can be both good and evil. In Japanese lore, there is the basan, which is a slightly large chicken-like bird with brilliant red, green, and blue feathers, and a red, fleshy comb shape on its head like a cockerel. And it can spit fire. However, the fire is said to be unharmful and more like a glow. And it can also vanish if it thinks it's been spotted.
It's like Mushu.
Almost, yes. there is also the Suribebi, a friendly small tree spirit that appears to be as a glowing and fiery white-blue orb that floats up and down. Sometimes you can make out a human-ish beastly face in the glowing blue flames. It's supposedly an immortal yokai and is an embodiment of the element of fire. And its fire also is not harmful.
That would be nice.
Yeah. In Chinese mythology, there is the vermilion bird, are also known as the Suzaku. It's a large, friendly, phoenix-like bird with magnificent vermilion-colored feathers and a long, elegant tail similar to a peacock. This spiritual creature was created from the Chinese constellations and is also one of the four great beasts in ancient Chinese mythology, and it rules the south summer seasons. In Lithuanian folklore, there is the Aivaras. It's a mostly friendly, dark, fiery-tailed rooster if it's inside. If it's outside, then it will appear as a black dragon that can be mistaken for a comet as it flies overhead.
Whoa.
And it can become attached to your home and never leave, which could pose some problems. Because not only does it shapeshift and bring good luck to your household, it can also bring bad luck, steal gold and grain from your neighbors, but also steal your soul.
Yeah. I mean, of course you're a girl dragon.
Yeah. That's it. Mm-hmm. In medieval folklore, there are several beings. First is the dragon, which is a mostly dangerous winged reptilian beast that can grow to a variety of sizes depending on the species, habitat, and most often they are massive in size, which is helpful when they want to overthrow a castle with a damsel in distress trapped inside, or kill a bunch of innocent people because the fucking mother of dragons riding on your back is fucking psycho. Dragons are usually burgundy, forest green, or stone gray in color and have a full row of dagger-like teeth. Their ability include flight, extreme strength, ability to breathe fire, and thick reptilian skin that makes it very difficult to wound this magnificent creature. Next is the fire salamander. These salamanders were considered to be the personification of fire. This one is the fire elemental. And it has been around in legend and lore for centuries, and some tales having been the ones who taught humans how to use fire. In other traditions, they are said to be the cause of various phenomena, such as St. Elmo's fire, which is a coronal discharge of light off appointed objects. Discharge of light off of pointed objects under certain atmospheric conditions. They are also linked to various electrical phenomena, and these fire elementals were often blamed for volcanic eruptions, indeed said to lurk within volcanoes. They look like regular salamanders, but they can leave behind small trails of fire when they zip around, or can be seen as bright glowing orbs of fire. Think of the little fire salamander in Disney's Frozen number 2.
So cute.
That is literally what made me do this entire thing.
Really?
I fucking am obsessed with that little purple salamander.
Mm-hmm.
It is so fucking cute.
It's adorable.
The moment that it stuck its tongue out.
It holds all the power. Oh.
Whenever it stuck its little tongue out to catch the fucking snowflake, I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
That was going to die.
So precious.
Yes. Besides that, what it looks like, there are also other descriptions of their appearance as being roughly humanoid in form, a human face, but with flaming slanted eyes, a face veiled by flames, and flickering bodies that are charged with a raging fire and streams of fiery energy.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Their form is in constant flux, churning and throbbing with flame. They have long been considered to be the strongest and fiercest of the elementals, often connected with the direction south, and sometimes associated with other similar spirits, such as the Djinn.
Mm-hmm.
Another medieval folklore creature is the Seraphim. They are metaphysical angelic beings, most commonly seen with a bright and fiery aura. They have 6 wings. 2 of them cover its 4 faces. 2 of them cover its feet. And the last 2 are so that it can fly. And they have the ability to impart God's holy and divine love onto humans, as well as purify sins, emotions, and thoughts. Whoa, wait a minute. How are they able to purify your sins? Well, priests do that, supposedly. So never mind. They can also conjure and manipulate fire and light. Their voices are said to be able to shatter glass and even kill a human if they were to hear it. The last of the medieval folklore creatures is a demon. Each demon is different, but they rarely show their true forms to humans. They will mostly appear as human or animals or even dark shadowy figures or clouds. Depending on the demon you encounter, they possess knowledge beyond human comprehension, are immortal, omnipotent beings, very persuasive and tempting, and some control legions of lesser demons and their hierarchy of hell. They also have the ability to shapeshift, possess humans, and have extreme strength. In Albanian folklore, there is the Kolshreda, an enormous and bright red serpent-like dragon with multiple heads, which can shapeshift into human form. She can breathe fire, control the weather, seeing as how she's a demonic water, storm, and fire dragon from the underworld. And it's said that she can also possess the sun and moon and would often cause weather-related destruction, only stopping her wrath if a human sacrifice is offered to her.
Wow.
She also brings agricultural and livestock prosperity to the village that she lives in. Finally, we have Slavic folklore, which is several beings as well. First, the Zemigorinish. It's a green three-headed dragon with serpent-like features, small front paws, and can walk on its hind legs. It can also shapeshift into a human, other animal, or a more fiery form. When it shapeshifts into human form, it sometimes is known to seduce women. It can also cast magic, breathe fire, regenerate, control the weather, and fly. And next is the Firebird, which is a falcon peacock-like bird with plumage and shades of scarlet, amber, and gold that is said to glow like fire. Even if a feather is plucked, it continues to glow just as brightly. And it can either bring blessings or misfortune to its captor. Finally, the Balachoco, which is a gruesome giant with three male heads. One of the heads could breathe fire, and another could breathe icy wind. With its great size, it was also incredibly strong and destructive. It's not friendly either. So now that we know all of that, let's talk about how people have been connecting with elemental spirits. And it's not super crazy, but I feel like it's instructions for like kindergartner. First one is believe in them and keep a positive attitude.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, you started out with a Barney.
I sure did.
Finish off with a Barney vibe. Yes. It's safe and sweet.
Yes. To connect with elemental beings, you need to believe in them first. Belief heightens your awareness of their existence. You also need to adapt to the attitude you want the elementals to have, like positivity if you want the friendly spirits, or negativity if you wish to meet malicious creatures. To invite the elemental spirits into your house or someplace you love. To get to know them, invite them over. Make the effort you would normally do if it were human that you were inviting into your space. Clean, decorate, and prepare food. You can also give them gifts. Third, clear your mind and focus on gaining a higher state of awareness. You can do this whether at home or outdoors by meditating. You may not see or hear the elementals in the beginning, but you may feel them or notice other odd signs like hearing ringing bells or seeing animals approach you. Fourth, thank the creatures after interacting with them. Showing gratitude for them, sparing some time to connect with you, helps build trust and appreciation. Like any other being in the world, showing appreciation in another's efforts can go a long way. Elemental spirits of this world, while generally helpful and crucial to nature and all living beings, can also be malevolent. This could be because they have been triggered by certain humans or their actions and felt like they have to defend nature themselves. They are naturally malicious, or they have progressed into maliciousness from all the negativity around them. Some signs that an elemental is malevolent are when they appear as a deformed mix of a human and an animal, or have decomposing flesh, when a bad odor permeates the air while they are present, and when they look at you with piercing eyes. If elemental spirits haunt you, the things that happen usually resemble a light poltergeist haunting. Prankster fairies may move objects around your house, and you may see bright lights hovering in place. A more in-depth look into the process of elemental hauntings is in different stages. The prerequisite stage, young elementals may first appear to you as a normal person, like a young child or an old person, to make plans and judge whether to commence haunting you or not. That is terrifying. That's what the children are.
The where?
Black-eyed children.
Oh, yeah.
The first stage is the elemental spirit will supply you with unnerving manifestations. These are harmless, and they can then progress into bad dreams. The second stage, you'll start seeing fading shadows, losing objects, and electrical disturbances. This is the part where the elemental decides to ramp up the haunting and do more complex manifestations. And it usually happens once the elemental has gotten feedback from your reactions to what the fuck they're doing. The third stage, the elemental spirit will attempt to mentally project thoughts and emotions to you. You may be confused and in a state of fear by now with its antics, and this will make the elemental realize that fear is the best and most satisfying emotion they can get out of you. The fourth stage, this is the part where the haunting will continue until the spirit is driven out. If you are being haunted by elemental beings of this world, you will want to get rid of them, especially if they are more malevolent than simply bothersome. Humans have experienced elemental hauntings throughout the years, so they have by now established some things that drive out their spirits. So here is a small list. Ring loud bells or make loud noises with metal pots and pans. Can you imagine?
Yes.
Place iron around the house and wear iron on you or carry it in your pocket. Smoke sage throughout your house. Mix pepper and vinegar in a bowl, then place it anywhere inside the house. I said pepper, and she came out from her blanket. Mm-hmm. And last, ask them to leave. This only works if they're not vengeful, though.
Uh-huh.
But that is our episode on fire elementals.
Very cool. Did you do fire first because it's Aries season right now?
Oh my god, no, I didn't. I did it literally because I saw that.
Whoa, well, it was the fire sign time, so that's perfect. And that now makes me want to question when there's like a haunted plantation. Exactly. Or like a haunted farm, like, mm-hmm. Is it the elementals that are angry and not just the spirits? Yes. Because they're like, what the fuck? For centuries, the families here were doing this and doing that to keep us happy. And now what the hell are y'all doing besides destroying this house and turning it beige in the inside?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Maybe that's what my house was haunted with over there by your old apartment.
See, that's wild.
It was that a brand new house, remember?
That's what I'm thinking. So the land, like, yes. It doesn't have to be what happened on the land. It might just be because it is land. Like, you have to be grateful for what you get,
yes.
Where you live, and give back and all that. That's what I was about to say, too, and earlier when we were talking about how we like the little rituals and the practices that people do. Because mm-hmm. There's just such, like, a beauty and richness of culture and stuff with that kind of thing. Yes. And I feel like it's kind of disappearing, like, I don't know. Absolutely. I might be lying. I don't know. For the most part, like, people's families used to do certain practices on certain days, depending on the time of the year or mm-hmm. I don't know.
Nature. Yeah. Nobody, they only do like to God. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When nature is literally right in front of our faces and we do not honor it in any way.
And that's kind of like a way to manifest and give thanks to, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
I don't know.
What you have right now.
We need to go back to that. Yeah, we need to go back to doing those kinds of things. Dude, I know the time starts again from the beginning.
Ooh, I would not enjoy that. But at the same time, it would be nice.
Scared. Low key, I was nervous about the eclipse. I was like, oh, hell.
My mom was
It's tripping. A big event. I don't have any superstitions towards eclipses, but I was nervous.
Well, shit, whenever it was happening, like, it was starting to get dark, my chest felt heavy. Like, I legit felt like I couldn't catch my breath.
Interesting.
It was weird. I was working, too.
Huh.
I was like, man, Jess, who I work with, she also felt the same thing. She was like, dude, my chest, like, I feel like a little bit claustrophobic. And I was like, I feel that way too. That's weird.
I wonder if anyone else can relate.
I'm sure that eclipse sickness everyone kept talking about, but I was like, maybe it was just too much energy that was like overwhelming my body or something. Because I wasn't like freaking out about it. I was like going on about the day, but I don't know. It was just weird. It was a weird ass feeling.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know at what moment. the eclipse was going on over here because I did yard work that day and then I went to take a bath because I didn't have like eclipse glasses anyways and mm-hmm. it was cloudy over here. So I was like, I don't know if I'm going to even be able to see it. So I kind of kept up with when it was going to happen. But then I lost track. So I can't say like what I was feeling at that time. Mm-mm.
And you, man, I would have been like, let's take the dogs out, blah, blah, blah.
Nope. Right.
I didn't have eclipse glasses either because Emma stole them in the morning from me.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah. I was like, this is nice.
I was all nervous. I was like, should I not be outside with dilated pupils?
Shit.
Like, even if I'm not looking up, I was like, am I damaging my eyes by being out in the light like this?
Oh, my God. Well, that's how it kind of felt, sunglasses too. On. I don't know. It was weird. It didn't get that dark here, but it did get darker than normal.
It just kind of reminded me of like when you put your thumb on the water hose, like does that mean the light is like extra powerful on the tip, on the edges where it's still coming out?
I think that's, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I feel like that might, but yeah, but like, well, that's what people were saying, that radiation was going to like come extra at us.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, either way.
I know nothing. I know nothing about it. So who knows? Like in terms of like scientifically what's going on with the light or with the distance or where you live or whatever. But anyways, yeah, that was fun that we had a little phenomena go on during our lifetime. And the next one is in a couple years. So we got to share this one.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And yeah, this whole thing has me tripping out about if elementals are unhappy with how we're taking care of the land.
I didn't know this last part about the haunting shit. I didn't know about it until I was reading all this.
But they could still like wreak havoc even years later or whatever. Yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how even if something like climate change is real, that we could explain with like this, you know what I mean? Like, oh.
Absolutely. They're pissed off at us.
They're angry. Yeah. But anyways, very nice. I really enjoyed that episode. That was fun.
Yay!
Nice way to dive back in with and a happy birthday, all the Aries out there.
Yes.
Calm down.
Happy birthday,
Hunter's over here jumping around. Right. It was his birthday on the 1st, and oh my goodness, around like the middle of March and through the whole month of April, he is just so funny.
Why? He just is excited.
I don't know what it is. It just, his energy just really shifts and you can just tell like, oh, he's in his element right now. Like
it is my time to shine.
Joking around, bouncing around, not taking nothing seriously.
That's cute, like, that's Abby. Fun.
He's so busy all the time. So when he's got time to joke around, I better be in a good mood because
you're like,
that way I can enjoy it. Yes. Not like, dang, relax. It's funny. Anywho, all right, y'all. Well, we'll catch you next week with something different. Thank you guys for joining us today. Thank you for all your support. You can catch us on Instagram and on Facebook, GIMME, The Creeps. Thank you guys so much.
So, did we give you the creeps?